Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is We Have Communicators, episode 100, recorded on September 14th, 2010. Enjoy! All right, it's time for We Have Communicators. I'm Michael Johnston, and we're here talking about the iPhone, the iPod Touch, iOS, iPads, and everything in between. I'm your host, and Adam Christensen is here from the MacCast. Hey, Adam, how you doing?
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good.
Yeah?
Yep.
Do I get to say happy birthday to us?
Yeah, happy birthday to us. It's 100, the 100th show, and I forgot to bake a cake.
Oh, yeah.
I was informed Jeff Gamet, managing editor at the Mac Observer, is also here. But was it Jeff or you, Adam, that said I should have a cake?
Well, I said you should have a cake.
Okay.
And then I was horribly disappointed to find out.
Yeah, you were expecting the cake. You had your plate and fork ready to go. You have ice cream sitting there melting now.
Yeah, that's the reason I showed up. I'm here for the cake today.
Yeah.
And there's no cake.
No, I'm sorry to disappoint you. There will be cake at show 200. How about that?
I don't believe you.
Yeah, the cake is a lie.
Yeah.
I'm really happy I got to say
well
that.
Well played.
Yes. All right, so before we get into it, we're going to talk about a lot of news, and we got our iPhone picks coming up. But before we talk about that, we have to address the issue of mugs. Right, because Jeff, of course, draws these wonderful illustrations for his Zazzle and Cafe Press store and all that during the show and at other points in time. And so he asked if anybody would like a mug of us doing the podcast or a mug with us doing the podcast on it. I really keep...
mug with our mugs, basically.
A mug,
thank
yes.
you, Adam.
Yeah, a mug with our mugs. There you go.
Yeah.
So we've gotten a lot of responses from you guys, a lot of emails. I forwarded those to Jeff, so he's gotten them, and we received your emails. If you sent them to the feedback@wehavecommunicators.com email address, and we got various tweets, and so I think you're going to do it, right, Jeff?
Yeah. We got enough of a positive response that I guess I'm kind of committed, because I said if enough people said they wanted one, and I would do it. And since the show is recorded and people can go back and find that and prove I said that, I'm pretty much obligated now. So
yeah, well, we got lots of responses on that.
You can get yours for just $24.95.
Yeah, no. That's the special discount that I get for making.
You mean I have to pay $24.95 to get it?
I'm joking. I don't know what the price is going to be.
What's the price, Jeff?
Oh, I don't remember.
Figure that out. Pricing coming soon.
Yeah, pricing coming soon.
Is it basically going to be whatever Cafe Press plus, your 300% whatever the word is that I'm looking for?
Markup?
Yes, that one.
Yeah.
Plus residuals.
Capitalism rocks.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
The crappy thing is I have to pay myself licensing and royalty for my own likeness.
Yeah, plus there's my licensing and royalty and your licensing and royalty. It all adds up.
Yeah.
Yeah. So basically what it comes down to is for every mug people buy, I have to pay Michael and Adam $5 out of my own pocket. Oh, man, capitalism sucks all of a sudden.
All right. So I think Jeff's going to figure that out, and we'll have some details for you guys in probably a few weeks. I'll give you some time.
Cool, because... it may take a while to come up with drawings that accurately represent each of us.
Yeah, I'm excited now. I'm just now realizing that I'm going to be on a mug.
You are? Have you ever been on a mug before?
I haven't been on a mug. Have you been on a mug?
My photo has ended up on a mug before.
That would be really fun. The one where you're holding the hot sauce. I think that's what I have for your iChat picture or your contact picture. I'd like to have that on a mug. That'd be cute.
You know, I was thinking shot glasses for that.
Oh, yes. Okay, shot glasses.
Yeah, and then everyone could drink with me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, so we have a lot of news to talk about. We took a week off, and so, yeah. The first thing, Ping. Apple announced that they've gotten over 1 million Ping users in the first 2 days, and I haven't really used Ping a whole lot, and I'm curious to know if you guys have.
Well, I wonder how the 1 million people found each other.
Yeah, is the so I've
we
heard
all knew
some...
each other already, and see that's why it plateaued at 1 million because now we can't find anyone else.
Yeah, it seemed like it was a big club of like podcasters that found each other, and then like Phil Schiller.
Yeah, the problem is you have to you can like kind of search by name, but there's you know because they killed the Facebook thing right away.
Right,
you know, Facebook told Apple to piss off. And yeah, that kind of sucks about it. But it's I'm actually enjoying Ping so far. Been kind of nice.
You know, I'm enjoying it, but not as much as I would like to enjoy it.
Yes, I would totally agree with that.
Yeah, the problem I'm having is that it feels like all the parts of Ping are too disjointed. So
exactly.
I have to leave Ping and then go into the iTunes store to find a song that I like, and then I can like it. But then I go back to Ping to see that it's been liked, and then I can add comments if I'm so inclined.
Yeah, I think it would make more sense if you could do that from your library, or if you could just even share the fact that you you have all the songs in your library with people who follow you.
Yes,
so you could pick through other people's you know, stack of records.
Yeah. The other thing that I would have liked to have seen is when I'm on an album page, if people have commented on that, like, Jeff, if you go through that process and you comment on an album, I should still be able to see your comments on that album when I'm viewing that album page because I'm following you.
Oh, yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yes, that would be a really good thing, too. Yeah.
Or that song, you know, like Jeff liked this song.
Yeah, I'd also like to be able to insert into my stream what I'm currently listening to. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to be able to initiate comments without having to first like an album or a song.
Yeah, just a regular comment. So, you know, it's sort of like a social network that just feels like it's very beta. You know, this is another one of those instances to me where Apple is not really sure what to do. And my biggest complaint is that I worry too much that they start these things and then they let them go. So examples of that I pointed out in my own show are iMixes, which are still there, right? Have you guys ever made an iMix?
I think I did once, but I really liked the idea before I tried to make it, I guess. And then I made it, and it was terribly difficult to do, and it didn't really go anywhere.
Right, now it just lingers around as this extra feature that no one uses. And, you know, Genius Mixes kind of feels like that, too. It was, like, a good concept, but then Apple kind of abandoned. And I worry that, like, Ping is just the thing that they're abandoning Genius and Genius Mixes for, and then they'll get tired of it, and, you know, it'll just be sitting there in iTunes as this sad little social network.
Yeah, well, I think that it would be more popular if it was more useful.
Well, and so that's my hope. Right now, it's feeling like it could go one way or the other, right? Apple could go, okay, that was a neat experiment, and we're not going to put any more resources on that.
Right. It's on the cusp of gimmicky and usefulness, I think.
Exactly.
Well, I think Apple's deal with starting it slim, shall we say, is because the purpose of Ping, just like the purpose of everything else Apple does, is to sell product.
Right.
Right.
And in this case, it's to sell music through the iTunes store. So what they did was they put in the core functionality that they want, which is create a system, although it could be an easier system, where people can let other users know what music they're buying. So they've got that part. Now they need to add in a few more things to make it something that's more interesting for us and something that's easier to interact with. And then I think it'll it will grow more. So I have a feeling Ping will be around for a while. It may change form and evolve, which is okay. But I don't think it's going to go away, because I think that would end up being a black eye for Apple. So they'll figure out a way to make it work somehow.
Okay. Do you guys have Ping up right now? Because another thing I had a complaint about was how commercialized the recommended artists you follow are, because it didn't seem to be based off of my musical tastes or anything other than probably these are the artists that the labels want to promote right at launch. Because it had artists for music that I would never ever listen to, and then like we recommend you follow this artist, and it's like, I don't even like that artist. I don't know what's going on. And I've been away for a little while, and I just brought it back up, and now I'm looking at the list, and it seems like I'm not recognizing all the bands here, but they seem more in the genres that I would go for. So I'm kind of curious, if you guys go to the people page and look at the little column that says we recommend you follow, I'm wondering if I'm still getting the same artists as everybody else, or if it's more tailored to...
Okay, so how do I get to what you're talking about?
So if you go under the Ping menu, so this is the other thing.
I don't know how to.
Good point to bring up is navigation of Ping is terrible.
Yeah.
Jeez.
I mean, are we talking about Apple, or are we talking about some other company that doesn't know how to make interfaces?
Yeah. Well, iTunes has just become the. You know, I'm calling it. It's like this Hydra.
Oh my God.
You lop off a head, or you develop. In Apple's case, you develop a feature, and it grows into like two other features.
Yeah. So maybe we should start referring to it as Hydra Tunes.
Hydra Tunes.
I like that.
But so if you go into the Ping section and then you go under the Ping menu where you get the little drop down arrow.
And okay, Ping menu, drop down arrow, and people,
select
right?
People.
Okay.
And then in the right hand column, it'll say we recommend you follow these artists.
Steve Miller Band, Heart, Radiohead.
Okay, Jump. So see, it is being more tailored, because I have Disturbed. I don't know how you say that.
Is that Dottie? A screamo band?
Average, Sevenfold, Auburn, and Alice in Chains.
Interesting. So my list is showing Avenged Sevenfold, The Ready Set, Never Shout Never, Joan Jett and the Blackhearts, Steve Miller Band.
Yes.
So there's a lot of crossover in recommendations for the three of us.
But we probably... I would imagine I've seen some of the things you've been throwing up, Jeff, and I like some of the music that you like. So it kind of makes sense that similar bands. But now it seems like they are maybe tailoring the artists a little more to the things that I've been adding to my... So maybe there really is an engine around here, running behind the scenes here, and it just needed some time for me to start saying, I like this artist, because I've been liking some artists and posting some albums, and it's been picking up from there. What's interesting is it didn't seem to pick up from those 10 initial albums you could kind of pre-populate. You know, when you set up your profile, they ask you to put in music that you like and genres that you like, and it didn't seem to key off of that, but it seems like maybe it is keying off of the stuff I've actually gone into the iTunes store and started saying, I like this, I like that.
Okay, that's interesting.
So... it's maybe already showing promise, I guess is what I'm saying. Maybe there's already some signs that at least underlying technology is there, and they just need to build the connections now and the navigation and some of the start adding on features, which is what my hope for Ping is, because I think right now I'm liking it, and it seems like it's something that ultimately might be useful for me, but it isn't 100% the way I would like it to be right now. And I'm hoping that Apple feels the same way, that you know, here is the thing. We just want to get some users on it, start gathering some data, and then figure out how we're going to tailor and build this thing out.
I hope that's what they do. Now, I'm going to bitch again about how you find people, because Michael, your friend request showed up.
Yeah, I just did that.
Yeah, you just did it. The reason I never friended you was because the list of Michael Johnstons was so long that I just gave up.
Oh, really? Well, I've got a couple people following me.
So I just confirmed your request, and now I'm following you.
It's interesting that there are so many people with my name. I think...
there's a lot of them in Canada.
Huh. Oh, yeah, that's true.
which, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. I just find it interesting that Michael Johnston is such a common name in Canada.
Yeah, well, they're fans of good names in Canada.
Okay, I'll accept that. Sure.
But yeah, I don't know. I just haven't seen a lot of use for it yet. And honestly, it might be partially due to my inability to focus on something that's so poorly designed that I can't figure out in a few minutes.
Well, I mean, yeah, the interface needs a lot of work.
It does.
I mean, just getting through the recent activity stream is like, I wish I could filter out. Like, I don't want to see the Jeff just started following or so-and-so just started following stuff as much as I want to see what people are buying and what people are liking or that sort of thing. And there's no filtering of that information. It's just sort of one stream and you have no control over how many of those that you can see. You know, you can go down and click the more thing, but that becomes a little bit like the whole Twitter stream or Facebook stream where it's like you're digging and digging and digging and not finding the information that you want. So those are the things that I hope get finessed and changed. And I'm sure that they will with feedback. So
sure. And they have been changing things. Jeff, I think you mentioned that you couldn't write a comment for an album or a song unless you like it. And I just did that. So I think they're tweaking.
You can't just post a comment. I can't just like make a comment on Ping about anything. You have to comment on an album or on an activity, some sort of activity somebody's already done, which right now, as far as I know, the only activities you can do is following someone, liking an album, or posting an album.
Right.
And once that's up there, then you can comment on that, but I can't just say, you know, some random comment
to
my stream.
You can't post a comment saying, hey, does anyone know any good jazz bands in Denver?
Right.
Right.
And maybe there's a good reason for that, though. I mean, maybe Apple wants to avoid the, I just had chicken cacciatore for lunch.
Yeah, that might be a control sort of thing to keep it from becoming just a Twitter. Yeah. So that might be a good thing.
Well, maybe, except I feel like my interaction with people in Ping is very restricted.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And there are times when there's something that I would like to say that is definitely Ping appropriate, but I haven't gone to do that because I would have to go over to the iTunes store, pick a song, like it, and then come back in and then add a comment.
But see, Jeff, you have control and you're courteous. And would do something relevant, and a lot of people wouldn't, and Apple probably is afraid of it degrading into something that's not about music, and right now I think they want to keep it very focused on music. So I kind of understand why that feature's not there when I start to really analyze it and think about it, because it'd be like my stream that I'm just complaining about already kind of being cluttered would be cluttered up with a lot of random gunk that I probably didn't care about in a Ping context.
Right, and you know someone would come up with an Apple script or something that ties into iTunes and scrapes your own Twitter or Facebook feed then dumps it into your Ping feed. So everything you're doing in those places just starts showing up in here, at which point I would probably just stop using Ping.
You know what we should do is just not use Ping, and then whenever we have a music comment, we use Twitter and just use like hashtag Ping or something.
that's my other thing with Ping. The other dilemma I'm having is I've been a bad, what I consider to myself, a bad social citizen in a lot of ways, because I just, on Facebook, I follow everybody, and on some of these other social networks, Twitter and Foursquare and Gowalla, all of these, you know, I just accept everybody's friend request. And I've kind of decided with Ping, I'm taking the approach that I'm being a little more discerning, because I do want to make sure that I want to use it for finding music, because I have a hard time finding music. So I'm trying to follow people that I really know or might be interested in the type of music that they want, and not just accepting every request. But then you have that whole social thing where you feel kind of bad because, you know, a lot of these people are listeners who email me and stuff like that. And I'm like, I've interacted with them, but I really don't know that person. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you might
not. So where do you draw the line? with your various social networks.
Right. That's always a dilemma. You know, you feel that peer pressure of like, oh, I should just let everybody in there. But then it gets cluttered. That stream gets cluttered, and then it becomes less valuable and less useful to me. And I kind of don't want that to happen on Ping.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm still trying to decide how I want to use Ping. So, like, Facebook for me, that's fairly limited who can be in my Facebook group. Twitter, it's just open.
Right.
And Ping, I think, is kind of somewhere in between. What I did was I did the lockdown thing so that I have to approve you to be my Ping friend. But other than that, I'm not using that as a screening process so much. I mean, anyone, if they do a Ping invite to me, I'm accepting it. So it's kind of, Ping for me is kind of open for anyone. It's just that I'm going through the extra step of approving each person.
Yeah. See, I took that approach with Facebook, and I'm really kind of regretting it now.
Because yeah.
Facebook kind of has lost some of its value for me. And I might be getting close to doing the reversal thing that a lot of people have done who, you know, are in that position. And I don't want to get in that position with Ping. So I have Ping open. You know, anybody can follow me. I'm just not doing the follow back. And so I guess in some ways this is my my response back to everybody who's sent a request who I haven't reciprocated, saying you might not get reciprocation back from me, and this is why.
Oh yeah, now the follow back thing, I'm being very limited on that, so anyone can follow me, but I'm not following everyone back.
Yeah, and that's just because I don't want that stream to get cluttered, because I've had other networks go not valuable to me because it's just there's too much signal to noise ratio.
Now I have a question. I just went and searched through Ping for a few of my closer friends, like personal friends who don't spend every day on their computer talking about Apple stuff, mm-hmm. like we do, and nobody's on there.
Right.
So my question is anybody besides us, and I include the listeners of the show and people who are into this stuff, do you think normal people have any interest in Ping at all? Is this useful for normal people, I guess, is the question?
Not yet, I don't think.
So we're all kind of beta testing this for Apple?
Yeah. I mean, people like us, a lot of our listeners as well, are the people that tend to be on the cutting edge
yeah.
with this technology. So clearly, we are all beta testers for Ping. And I'm okay with that, because Ping is not a mission-critical service for me. So I hop in and play with it, and like I haven't done any comments or album stuff for the past few days because my schedule's been so busy, and I don't feel guilty about that.
Yeah. You know where I think Ping is going to get the more mainstream people is with the artist stuff. So you're going to see those people getting on Ping to follow their favorite artist when a new album's coming out or a concert's coming up or something like that. And then they'll probably get in through that side of things. So that's an interesting thing about Ping as a social network. We're probably jumping on and doing the whole social friend thing. But I think mainstream people are going to be searching for that latest album in iTunes. And it's going to say, hey, you want to follow this artist on Ping? Oh, well, what's that? Oh, I'll sign up for that. Yeah, I can get notifications of when they're going to be in town or when the concert's coming up or special extra stuff through iTunes. Oh, yeah, I'm interested in that. And I think you'll see those people starting to follow artists more in, you know, sort of like the Last FM kind of way. Or is that, I guess Last FM has that, but not even that. I think because they're on iTunes, you know, there are a lot of people who just use iTunes just for, you know, buying their music.
Sure.
So it's interesting because Apple will get those people that way, but it's going to take longer.
Yeah, which makes people like us important because we're doing all the beta testing. They'll hammer out a lot of details. And by the time Ping becomes more of a mainstream thing where the average music listener is getting involved, we will have gone through the growing pains and it'll be a much better service for them. So for all those people out there, you're welcome.
Yeah.
I wish we could have podcasts in here too.
Yeah, that would be pretty useful because, you know, it's much harder to find a good podcasts than it is to find good music.
I think this gets extended outside of music at some point. But again, I think early on, Apple's still just trying to figure out, you know,
like what to do.
What to do, exactly. So music was a good place to start, just like they did with iTunes way back when.
Sure. And that makes sense.
Yeah.
And then they made it all sucky with all these other things in it.
Yeah, so that may happen to Ping too.
Yep. Okay. Moving right along, iOS 4.1, which was announced at the event, the September music event, has been released. It was released last week, right?
Yep.
Yes.
A little more than a week, right? Is that right? Or has it just been a week?
Let's see. It was a Wednesday, so it was a week ago.
Yeah.
Yep. So it includes a bunch of bug fixes for Steve mentioned iPhone 3G users. I'm guessing there have been a lot of bug fixes for 3GS and iPhone 4 users as well, including the proximity sensor issue.
Yes.
Right? That you've been having. Is it fixed?
Yes, very much so fixed.
Excellent.
I mean, I literally used to be able to hold it up to my face and just tilt it a little bit, and I could see the screen come on out of the corner of my eye. Now I literally have to take it pretty far away from my face, and then there's a slight delay, like a half second or so before the screen comes back on, which is perfect.
Yeah. Cool.
So excellent.
I have not had that proximity issue since the update, and I've been using my phone pretty heavily over the last week. Yeah, the iOS 4.1 in general as an update for me has been a really, really nice update with all the new features and the bug fixes. And I did some informal testing on a second gen iPod Touch. I don't know, was the iPhone 3G the only one that was having the speed issue?
Well, the iPhone 3G was the most notable with speed issues. And I have been having weird bugs and various problems. You know, I'm jailbroken, so I at some point decided that having every application take up so much RAM after I open it wasn't working for me. So I did a kind of whitelist approach to the whole thing, and that's definitely mitigated the problem. But I'm wondering if... okay, so we'll talk about the iPhone 3G. So there was actually a comparison video that someone just kind of threw up on the internet and just did a few basic things like going to Google Maps and doing text messages and just jumping through the interface. And overall, it's definitely an improvement, and you can see that in the video. But I'm guessing I have not updated to 4.1 because I can't jailbreak it yet. So have there been other just like performance and bug fixes that you guys have noticed?
There's a lot of subtle little things too. Mm-hmm. And Brian and Dave came up with a really nice list of little things that they found, and so we ran an article at Mac Observer last week.
Okay.
And but one of the things that I really like out of this update, which is something that I just caught in passing as I was going through applications, they changed the look of appointments in Calendar. And I think they are so much easier to read now.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So they're doing the same sort of look that you have in the MobileMe Calendar beta, where it's the sort of like the translucent color with a solid border in the same color, and then the text in the same color, just solid. And it's a lot easier on my eyes. So it was one of those subtle little changes, but a very welcome change, for at least for me.
And what's the article titled for that Mac Observer piece with the different changes? Do you remember?
No, but I can find it for you. I thought I had it, but I'm looking at the wrong day.
So besides little fixes and tweaks, is performance better? Are you guys are both on iPhone 4s, right?
I was on iPhone 4, so I didn't really notice any performance change per se. But I mean, like the additions of things like HDR photo is really nice.
Yeah, that's nice.
One thing with HDR photo that I wish they would do is in the camera roll, when you take an HDR photo, so it takes, you know, you can have it in the system preferences take two photos, so it keeps the original and does the HDR thing. In the camera roll, when you're flipping through, it puts this little watermarked HDR up in the corner, not on the photo, but, you know, just to indicate, okay, this is the HDR version versus the non-HDR version. But that doesn't carry across to the camera app. It's only in the photo app, or wait, sorry, got it backwards. I always do that. It's in the camera app, but it doesn't carry across to the photos app. And I don't know why that is. And also, I haven't found a way. If anybody knows a way, once I bring it into iTunes, there's nothing in the metadata to note which is the HDR and which is not the HDR. And normally wouldn't be a problem if you're talking about sort of the artsy kind of HDR, but the HDR that Apple does is really subtle.
Right.
So it's sometimes hard for me to know, okay, what was the original? What was the HDR one? I mean, you got to really kind of dive in and look at the details. And I wish there was a quick glance to go, oh, that's the HDR one and that's the non-HDR one.
Yeah, that would be nice.
So,
yeah, it's interesting. I've been doing a lot of testing with Apple's HDR and then with Pro HDR. Mm-hmm. And the results that I'm getting in each app, radically different.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there have been times where Apple's HDR, hands down, what I would prefer for an image. Other times where I really prefer what I'm getting out of Pro HDR. So what I'm finding is that a lot of times I'll take a photo with Apple's HDR, then hop over and take the same photo with Pro HDR so that I can choose later which one I prefer. So it actually takes me a lot longer to take photos now than it did before because I have to double up my work. I know, first world problems. Oh, and I found the article.
Yeah, I found it too, the digging past the release notes.
Right, from September 8th. That's the one.
Yep. Okay, so iOS 4.1 also restores field test mode, which was, I believe that was in iOS 1 through 3, right? And then they removed it when they released 4.0. And what that allowed you to do is to get the raw data regarding what towers your phone was connected to. So you could see what kind of signal strength you had and various other bits of information that I didn't understand, but was very useful and would have been very useful with the whole iPhone 4 antenna problem thing, the antenna gate issue initially.
You know, I have a question on that note. Before we move on to that, before I get a bunch of emails, I do need to mention that I guess there was some user error on my point. That HDR watermarking thing is in the Photos app.
Oh, okay.
You just have to bring up the controls before you see it.
Gotcha.
So, okay. But it does not carry over, as far as I know, to the iPhone or to iPhoto, excuse me, when you import the photos. If somebody does know a way to get that information, that'd be great.
So it's somewhere in the metadata, but it's just not exposed in iPhoto.
Yeah, at least the iPhone makes aware of it. I haven't been able to find it anywhere in the metadata, at least in iPhoto. Maybe it is buried in metadata if I use another third-party app, but I haven't had the time to do the digging yet.
Gotcha. But
with the field test thing, so I played around with that field test mode, which is cool. But more, one of the things that I noticed, you were asking about bug fixes in 4.1, and I don't know if this is just me or not, but I noticed that I cannot recreate that antenna gate bug thing as easily as before.
Mm.
You know, like the hand covering the antenna signal going down issue. It still does, but doesn't seem to happen as quickly, or I don't know if the signal, you can see the signal drop, especially in the test mode, but I seem to have, in general, it seems like what appears to be a better signal, and maybe it's just perception. I don't know. Or maybe AT&T changed the equipment in my area. That's another one of those things. I'd been on the road, so I haven't had time to like sort of verify. But I thought I read an article somewhere that said that they thought also that Apple may have tweaked some things in the formulas or something. Something changed.
I don't know. I can't get a 5-bar signal around my place. But I get strong 4-bar signals all the time. So I'm not sure, because I just see pretty much the same data all the time.
Yeah. And see, I was typically, after they did the first update, you know, where they changed the bar profiles. So I was always getting 5 at my house. And then they did the 4. Which one was the update where they tweaked the signal bars? 402?
Was that 1 or 2?
Yeah, I can't remember which one.
So when they did that, I was getting pretty much 1 all the time. And now, since 4.1, I'm getting 2 or 3. So again, it could just be maybe AT&T swapped out some equipment in my area, but the timing was right around the 4.1 update. So
interesting.
Yeah.
Hey, Adam. Have you been recording?
Yes.
Oh, thank you. I think it's screwed up. Yeah, GarageBand gave me a disk too slow error, and of course I'm on a solid state drive, so, and I just paused and hit re-record, and it just kind of lost everything that it indicated it was recording, so yeah.
Good. Adam to the rescue.
Adam to the rescue. All right, so moving right along. Let's see here. AirPlay compatible speakers have been announced by from iHome and Denon and various other speaker manufacturers. Something I didn't realize would actually happen. I figured this. Okay, so the AirPlay thing, for those who don't remember, it was announced as part of the Apple TV / iOS 4.1 update, right? Or is it 4.2 that we're going
to? No, it's available. It's 4.1, isn't it?
4.1, but we just don't have anything to send it to yet, I don't think.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what it allows you to do is stream audio and video from your iOS device to an AirPlay compatible thing. So Apple TV being the flagship example from Apple, so you can stream any video or audio that you have on your iPod or iPhone or anything to the Apple TV. But then the iHome and various other companies are announcing that they will also have support for that. So, you know, you can stream music wirelessly.
Now, I'm wondering if anyone's going to make an AirPlay compatible TV.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that would be cool. I mean,
it would kind of negate the need for an Apple TV for a lot of people. But, I mean, still, that would be kind of cool. Because as far as I know, AirPlay, Apple's made that open so that pretty much any manufacturer can use it if they want.
Right.
Well, okay, so now what I'm wondering about, and I just caught this in passing before I left, is that this next thing you have in the notes, Michael, about the BridgeCo deal. So I guess it was a joint technology. So is it Apple's version of open where they worked out this standard with BridgeCo, and as long as you use the BridgeCo Apple technology, you know, sort of in the same way that FireWire was open, but nobody really, beyond Sony and Apple, it was sort of not widely used or distributed.
I think it's actually open, because I've heard people talking about how some companies that already have Wi-Fi enabled speaker sets on the market are going to push out or give to people firmware updates that will enable AirPlay on their speakers.
That's awesome.
That's cool.
Yeah. So I'm looking at the apple.com/iTunes/AirPlay, and you can see a list of the manufacturers that are on board with this right now. Denon, Marantz, B&W, JBL, and iHome.
Yeah, and they all use the BridgeCo technology. That's why they're the first ones on board.
Right. Yeah, I'm excited. Have you guys ordered Apple TVs, or did you guys decide to stick with the current one?
You know, I did not order the new one because my current Apple TV works fine, and I have HD Netflix through my TiVo HD.
Oh, right.
And I also have the situation where my computer is my primary iTunes server for Apple TV. So if I travel and anyone else wants to watch anything that I have, I have to send it over to the Apple TV hard drive ahead of time.
Oh, right. Yeah.
I'll lose that ability if I go with the new Apple TV.
Yep. Adam, did you decide to get one?
I did, mainly for testing, but also because I wanted to be able to use the AirPlay video thing. And as far as I know, the Apple TV is the only thing right out of the gate that's going to support that. And what when I ordered it was the day I found out it was sort of official that the old Apple TV wasn't getting any software update with any right. of the new features. I'm like Jeff, though. I don't need the Netflix thing. I have Netflix on a ton of other places. So that was my main reason for buying it, is just to play around, have it to play around with and test. And I mean, it's cheap enough that it's not too bad, you know, $99. So
yeah. I'm doing it mainly for the Netflix part, but I'm also very excited for the AirPlay thing. And there is also the VLC announced that they are coming out with, well, I believe they've submitted the application to the App Store. So VLC, as some of you may know, is an application on the Mac and the PC that plays tons and tons of video, different types of video and things like that. And so the VLC version for the iPad will play back stuff like Xvid and DivX and those fairly common formats that aren't H.264 and don't normally play on the iPad. So I'm interested to see if we can AirPlay stuff from like a VLC as well. It'll be interesting to see how integrated into the OS it is and how that all works.
I'm going to bet you need to call APIs that Apple has to make that work.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll have to build it into the application.
Right. But are those open APIs just like... See, that's what I'm wondering is I felt the same way as you, Jeff. But so I think that Netflix and the ABC app and all of these, it's going to be part of that video spec, right? And it's just something they have to code in and enable the same way that you would enable video out through
right,
the
yeah.
docking cable. You have to add that to your software, but once you do, it's supported.
Yeah.
And
okay.
Have we confirmed that Apple has an open API for the AirPlay video? Is the only thing I haven't heard. Is that a private API or is it open?
I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, if it is open, I could see Apple TV as a really cool tool for presentations. So instead of having to wire your iPad or laptop into a projector.
Oh.
Have an AirPlay enabled projector, or you have an Apple TV that you plug in and then you're just going wirelessly from wherever you want to be in the presentation center.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah.
I bet it's in the developer documentation, so maybe I'll poke through that and see what it says. But I'm guessing that it works probably in the same way that when you pull up, if you have Bluetooth headphones, if you pull up a video or audio, it just gives you the little button.
Right.
Yeah. So I'm guessing that it's for if you're playing back just of using the regular video playback API or the audio playback API, it's probably just going to be included there. So for things like Netflix and Hulu and those guys who are doing strange things, they'll probably have to include that.
I don't think Netflix does strange things in terms of the video player, though. I do think it just overlays the standard Apple video player, doesn't it?
The only thing that indicates to me that it's different is that the controls aren't the standard Apple controls, right? It's kind of flat and just outlined in white instead of the standard...
You pay more attention than I do.
Did not
notice that.
It'll be interesting to see. So what do we have next? Macworld Mobile is coming to Mobile World Congress 2011. Jeff, do you know anything about that? Or have anything to say about that?
Yeah. So for people that don't know what it is, Macworld Expo has teamed up with Mobile World Congress. And so they're going to be handling iOS-related classes and sessions at this event, and they're also going to be doing another one a couple months later, and I just forgot where it is. So the first one's going to be in Barcelona, and then they're doing another event like this. It's like 2 months later somewhere else, which is cool because that means these events that previously did not have any type of presence from Apple or from other companies that could represent Apple technologies. Now they'll have that. And I think it's also great because it's showing that the people behind Macworld Expo aren't sitting back and just hoping that the same vendors and the same attendees that have always come to Macworld Expo in San Francisco will continue to be the people that provide all the support for their events. You know, they're branching out and they're hitting other things, and so they have multiple places where they can expand and grow, and I think that's really smart.
Right. And so most of the training and stuff like that, that's going to be focused for developers, right?
Yes. Yes. And that's cool because since these are outside the United States, there's a lot of developers that would like to learn more about coding for iOS but haven't been able to afford to fly to the United States for WWDC.
Right, yeah. So there's Asia Congress in Hong Kong.
That's the other one, the Hong Kong one.
Yep, and then the other one is Barcelona. That's the World Congress.
Yes.
In February 2011. Now, Macworld, they're still planning to do Macworld Expo, right?
Yeah, that's still January something. I can't remember
it's
the
like
dates.
The last week.
I sure hope so.
And it's going to all be in Moscone West this time, which I think is great because that means we don't have to do the crossing the streets to jump conference buildings depending on what you're doing.
Right.
27th through the 29th for the expo part. They have that the 26th that day before, which is the
special
part.
Sessions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So 26th through the 29th, January.
Cool. Let's see. Oh, Game Center. We forgot to talk about Game Center in 4.1. Have you guys got a chance to
yes,
check?
It's a worse implementation of Finding Friends than Ping, which
I didn't think was technically
possible. But yeah, because you can only do it by email address or the person's Game Center username that they pick, good. Which
right.
you will have no idea what it is.
Right.
And you can have any email address. You know, I have 5 email addresses and only 2 of them are attached to my Game Center. Luckily, they did add the ability to take your Apple ID email and attach other emails to that. So I could put all 5 of my email addresses on there and make it easier for people to find me, but I don't want to do that because I don't want to give Apple all my email addresses. And it's just like, so you have to do the thing like, what's your gamer tag? And I actually think I've seen now that people are posting their like a screenshot of their gamer profile page, like onto Facebook and Twitter so that people can like find them and follow them.
That's terrible.
Yeah, it's pretty sad. And since you can't figure out who the person is that's requesting
there's
to
no
be
profile.
Your game friend.
There's no
profiles. So right after I installed iOS 4.1, which was within minutes of it coming out, I go into Game Center and I was expecting to see an invitation from Dave Hamilton because he was able to get everything installed a couple minutes ahead of me. And so he said, I've sent you a Game Center invite so we can see what it looks like. I launch Game Center. I have 2 invites waiting. One from Dave and another one from Death Whore. And I'm thinking, are you kidding me? I already have a spam.
Is that Dave's gamer tag?
No.
No.
Dave's was Dave Hamilton.
Okay.
And so I approved Dave and just left the other one sitting there because I thought, okay, what's the likelihood that within 10 minutes of this iOS update being available, that someone has already logged in, set up a spam account, and is just hitting any name they can think of.
Correct.
Which is highly unlikely. So I left that one alone, thinking eventually I'm going to have a friend ask me, why haven't you approved me yet? And sure enough, I find out that it's one of my good friends, had no idea that they were using that as their gaming name. So, yeah, so they sat there for a day in limbo waiting for me to approve them.
Wow.
As if it would have mattered because I didn't have any Game Center compatible games.
Yeah, there's no profile picture, there's no full name, there's no way to know who a person requesting to to be your friend on. And then what's the stupid message they send out, Jeff? I totally forgot that it's
be
lame.
My something.
It's even worse than that. Be my friend like, would be good.
It's like, I love you, and can I touch you?
It's almost that bad. I got to find one of those emails, but it's like...
Yeah, it says...
Like, will you be my...
I'd like you to be my friend.
I'd like you to be my friend.
And I'm pretty sure that that if you could have it do a text, a voice saying, it would be kind of creepy, like, I'd like you to be my friend.
Oh boy!
But well, it's kind of fun. I mean, it is once you've got some people on there and you found some games, because that was difficult early on too. But they kind of set up a section, and I think developers have been quickly updating their games, and Apple's been quickly approving games with updates in there. The leaderboard stuff I found to be kind of fun, and the different achievements. Some of the game manufacturers are getting pretty creative with their achievements and things like that. So. Again, yeah. Enjoyable, but definitely in an alpha beta phase.
Yeah, and what I'm finding is that everyone I know is a lot better at games than I am.
Yeah, if you're going to be friends with somebody on Game Center, go check out Arnold Kim's profile. I'm sure he has one if he does. And I was friends with Arnold Kim on I think Plus or something like that. And I'm like, oh, cool. I'm gonna invite him to a whatever that first person shooter game was that came out. I think it was like I don't know. It was kind of like Halo, but like anyway, I was gonna challenge him after I had played it for a few days, so I knew how to play it, and then I realized that, you know, he's just so much better than I am at games, so I just decided not to.
Well, isn't it supposed to have some sort of feature where it'll randomly match you up with somebody of a similar skill level, supposedly? Yeah, isn't that one of the features of Game Center? I haven't done any of the head-to-head stuff yet.
As far as matching you up randomly... I haven't found that yet.
Yeah, I haven't seen that implemented either. But I would imagine, again, like all these features, they're all there. It's up to the game developer to take advantage of it. So, like, I have some games that just have achievements. They don't have leaderboards. I have other ones that have leaderboards and no achievements. So it's kind of random. That's why I'm saying it's feeling a little beta-ish, even probably alpha-ish in some cases.
Well, it's been in beta since, before 4.0 was publicly released, right?
Right. It just seems like there's not a lot of features in there. Like, I expected more out of it, I guess, out of the gate than I feel like I'm getting.
Yeah. I was expecting more. Basically, what I feel like I'm getting out of Game Center is a system where if I play the one game that I have that's Game Center compatible, I can go in and look and see how much better other people are doing compared to me.
Yeah, Open Faint and some of the other ones that are out there are much more robust and fleshed out in terms of their functionality, as far as I can tell. So it's going to be interesting to see if Apple can woo away developers from those other systems, you know, that are already out there and already have most of this functionality in there. I wasn't really... Isn't there supposed to be chat in Game Center, too? I haven't kind of seen that either.
Oh, I haven't been able to
figure
that.
Like a voice chat thing?
I thought there was going to be some sort of text chat where you could, you know, interact with people you're playing the games with.
Involved, too.
The only thing I found as far as chat goes, and I have to use the term very loosely in this case, is being able to change my status.
Right, exactly.
Playing game, not playing game. Right.
Well, you just type in something. So before I found any games, I think my status was, where the hell are all the games? And then after that, I changed it to something like, where do I put the quarter in this thing? And that's it. I've never touched the status thing since.
Now, do the games that now have Game Center support, can they also include support for like Plus? I'm guessing they're allowed to do that, and they probably have the ability to. Yeah, otherwise, these developers probably wouldn't do it.
I think some of the games have both.
That would seem reasonable, because if you can build in support for a bunch of different social game systems, and it doesn't really add any overhead to your game, well, why not?
Yeah. Right. As a user, I really don't know if I like that or prefer that, though. You know, I kind of like one system that just kept track of everything, and I think maybe that's what Apple was kind of hoping for, you know, to maintain eyeballs. But again, like I said, it feels very alpha, so I don't see it wooing over developers, because if you've already invested in something like OpenFaint and it's a better gaming network platform, then why wouldn't you just stick with that? I mean, there's no compelling reason for them to move over, other than maybe the promise that everybody's going to have Game Center and have a Game Center ID, and more players means more for you. I don't know what the revenue upside for a game developer is with Game Center, if there even is any. I don't even know if that's been talked about.
I don't know. Yeah, I think that supports the notion that this is really an alpha thing.
Yeah.
I'm real curious to know your thoughts, Jeff, on the look, because that was another thing that I like the look of it. I like the whole game table, you know, game felt wood kind of look aesthetically, but it's another one of these instances where I see Apple moving in the direction of, we're going to make something that's really pretty, but we're going to totally ignore any UI guidelines or rules, which I thought was very funny, because it came out in the same kind of in the same week as the guidelines, which basically say, yeah, if you don't follow the human interface UI guidelines, your app's not going to get approved message. And then you have Game Center that's like, I have a button that's totally flat and looks like it was printed on a piece of felt and really doesn't look like a button per se.
All right. So the funny thing is, now that I've heard your description of how this interface looks, I can totally see that. Before that, I thought of it as a green chalkboard with brown stripes. And it didn't even occur to me.
It's supposed to be like a poker table. Yeah, like a game table.
It didn't even occur to me that's what it was supposed to be. I kept looking at this going, okay, so they did kind of a chalkboard thing in the background. Whatever. Okay. So maybe it's like you're supposed to think of it as we're writing our scores on the board for each other to read. But yeah, now I get it. It's the felt, the green felt game table with the highly polished wood rails on it.
Right. Right. But yeah, again, it's, you know, in that way, it's sort of like GarageBand was, where it's like, what the hell is this? You know, where am I supposed to click? Where do I type? Where do I don't, you know, like I'm constantly wanting to click on there's like, because you can click the little yellow buttons, I think there's the like leaderboard information where there's like three little banners that says how many achievements, how many, you know, leaderboard things you have. I'm constantly wanting to click on those and they don't do anything.
Yeah.
You know, I'm expecting that to jump to show all my leaderboard information or all of my achievement information for all my games, and it's not going there. And I'm like, oh yeah, that doesn't work like that. But that, yeah, those are the human interface. That's why they have human interface guidelines, is so that I don't have to fumble around like that, right? But now I don't know what's a button and what's not a button, because they all kind of look the same.
Yeah, that's a big problem.
At least for me. Maybe I'm just an idiot, but...
Well, then we're both idiots, which may very well be the case. However, I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, yeah, it's... And then as I look around, there's other interface elements that are fairly standard to iOS apps, like the little arrow buttons at the top with the title of what you're going to go back to.
Right, and the little tabs at the bottom are pretty almost standard. But, I mean, overall, I would say, yes, it looks around the outside of it, and I don't have access to those guidelines, so maybe Apple has fully followed these guidelines. It doesn't feel like it to me, though.
Yeah, and as I'm tapping on things, some ribbons are tappable, some are not.
Right.
And is there any indication either way?
If it's that pale yellow color, it might be tappable.
Wow.
Yeah, but that's it might be tappable.
Ugh. All right, well, I'm not looking forward to Game Center anymore.
Sorry.
It's pretty, I mean, it's pretty neat in terms, once you get used to it, but that's my thing, is it wasn't immediately like everything didn't make sense. You had to use it for a while. And I'm only bringing that up because, again, it happened in the same week that Apple released the new developer rules thing, which I think we're going to get into. Maybe this is a good transition. But they released it in the same day. And there is a specific section in there that says, if you do not follow all of the human interface guidelines, we will reject your app, basically.
And here's Game Center.
Yeah, and I was like, is this really following them? I'm really curious to know. Maybe, like I said, maybe it is. Maybe if I got down into the details of it, it's like you only have to make sure that the menu bar's on the bottom and that you have these kinds of buttons and anything in the middle goes.
I don't think that they're restrictive to the point where they say that that bottom tab bar has to be black and the buttons there have to be blue and all that kind of thing, because there are a lot of applications, a lot of good applications that don't follow that exactly. They use different stylistic elements, but they remain, for the most part, they use the same ideas, concepts. So it makes sense, but it's just it has its own flair.
And I think the real answer is, though, despite what Apple wrote in that guideline that they published, I think there's a lot of discretion when it comes down to the individual app and maybe even the developer in terms of, like, you know, one guy's might get rejected because he does one thing. And that, I think, still hasn't gone away. And I kind of brought this up, is that these rules, even though they're now spelled out and it seems clear, they're written really in a kind of vague, open way. And Apple even says within the document, these are going to change. These are going to adapt as new things come up. So it's at least you have a written writing. I said, the good thing is developers know, hey, if I follow all of these rules, I have a really good chance of getting approved. If I try and move outside of them a little ways, I might get stopped.
Yeah. So Apple, there's been a lot of, you know, we've talked about it a lot on the show, that Apple seems to arbitrarily reject applications from the App Store for various reasons, and sometimes they don't give any reason. And they finally released a list of the guidelines that they use to approve applications for the App Store. So now that's out there. And there was another part to that. So they also said that they're going to start allowing third-party development tools again.
Yay! But not Flash. They're not going to be putting Flash in Safari like some people seem to want to report.
Yeah, which, okay, you know, basic reading comprehension people, it's not that tough, at least for me. So the deal is Adobe's Flash Professional CS5 developer tool that will take Flash code and compile it into native iOS code is acceptable again. And it wasn't for a while. That's not the same thing as saying Apple is allowing Flash on the iPhone, because they're not. And I'm not sure how people can twist that in their heads from you can cross-compile to Apple has to allow Flash to run on the iPhone now.
That's our classic, if you want a feature bad enough, you're on the iPhone, you can have it argument.
Yeah, okay, there you go.
if you believe just hard enough, it will be real. And in this case, it was, if I believe just hard enough, I can believe it to be real.
Right. Now, the only stipulation on allowing these third-party development tools to work is that the applications cannot access other code.
Yeah, you can't go write a fully compiled iOS app that then reaches out and runs Java code.
Right.
I think essentially what they're saying. You know, you can't write a just-in-time compiler that then goes out and grabs other code and sucks it in and runs it, which makes absolute sense from a security standpoint.
I agree. I have no problem with that at all.
And Adobe did actually announce that they've restarted their work on the cross-compiler.
Right. So Yeah, so what that means is since the cross-compiler was released as part of Creative Suite 5, people that already have Creative Suite 5 have been able to write iOS apps. They just can't get them on the App Store. So now Adobe will start working on updates and future versions of their cross-compiler again.
You know what I just realized? That rule does, I mean, that all those people were saying Flash was going to be on the iPhone, that completely rules out somebody, because we saw that for a while too, right? Where someone would try and get an app through that would then be able to open up a FLA or FLV or whatever the Flash file is and run it, right? Basically write a Flash player embedded inside an app. So that would totally rule out that sort of thing. You can't open up an FLA file or something that has ActionScript in it and start running it from within your app.
Right.
Yeah. So just further proof that Apple's making sure that you can't do that.
Right. So if you know anyone that's doing some demented happy jig because they think that they get to start running Flash on their iPhone, it's okay to set them straight because they're wrong.
Yes. Cool. Let's see here. FaceTime is possibly coming to Mac OS X and Windows, according to Mac Forever. They believe that in addition to the standard suite of applications with iLife 11, Apple will also be releasing FaceTime support for both Mac and Windows. And it's supposed that we will see the FaceTime support in iChat, of course, on OS X, but it's not been revealed or discussed or speculated upon how that will happen on Windows.
You know, the whole notion that that Apple adding FaceTime to Mac apps in some form is a rumor. Okay, it's a rumor because Apple hasn't announced it yet. But that's pretty much a given.
Right.
That at some point, Apple will add FaceTime support to the Mac.
Yep.
And since it's an open thing, then it's going to be coming to Windows as well. And Apple may write an app, or it may turn out that one of the Windows chat client things adds support in.
Well, I'll tell you, anybody who on the Windows platform who's been thinking about a Skype competitor or something like that, there's an opportunity.
They could use this.
Yeah,
it's all set up for them. They don't have to even build an infrastructure. They just have to make the interface.
So one way or another, you'll see it on Windows because it's an open standard. I mean, somebody's going to develop an app because there's going to be demand for it, because you're going to have enough people with iPhone 4s and iPod Touches even to reach out to with the technology.
Right, and so eventually it'll be on the iPad as well.
Right, exactly. And that's one of the rumors, according to Apple Insider, we'll probably see a front-facing FaceTime camera on the iPad no later than the first quarter of next year. Which is another one of those given things.
Yeah, well, yeah, we know it's coming. It's just a matter of when.
The date. I would say that time frame's plausible. I don't know if it's going to happen, but
yeah, well, the thing with the iPad is Apple doesn't have to stick with the type of release schedule that they've had for the iPhone.
Right.
Because they're not having to deal with contracts that people have with cell companies. So they can release a new iPad anytime they want. I have a feeling that they may follow a relatively standardized release cycle, just like they're doing with the iPhone and the iPod Touch, or the iPhone and the entire iPod lineup.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't surprise me to see a standardized release cycle for the iPad as well. And the next version, even though I know I've said in the past there's no reason for a camera on the iPad. Well, now FaceTime's out, so there's a reason for the camera on the iPad.
Right. Do you think... I just seem to have a hard time believing anything quicker than a yearly release schedule for any kind of device like that, just because of cost and then the whole customer service just nightmare that it sort of brings up.
Well, cost and development cycles to release the iPad, and then what, 6-8 months later, release an updated version. Just it doesn't seem like that's something Apple's going to do. Because if they were going to do that, why not put the camera in at the beginning?
Right.
Because the product development cycle for the next version would have had to have been so far along already. You might as well just jump to that revision and use that as the first.
I know people like to point to other companies, especially cell phone companies, who release, you know, phones every 6 months, but it's a little different because you're not talking about one model. You talk about a company like HTC or any other one of these. They're really different models with different feature sets. You know,
right.
You don't see them doing a new version of the, you know, ABC phone every 4 or 6 months.
Right. And since they are working on multiple products, it makes sense for them to stagger the release cycle. Otherwise, I mean, they're going to release 12 phones all at the same time.
Right.
That doesn't make sense because it's going to be too difficult for consumers to keep track of which phone they're interested in. And it probably would cost them way too much money to have all those products on the same release cycle.
Right. And also with cell phones, you're selling a lot more units. But I just hear a lot of people point to, well, you know, why couldn't they do a new iPad every 6 months? It's like, no, it's not. I don't buy it as a viable model.
I agree.
So we can talk about our iDevice picks, unless you guys want to hit on any of these other points or you know, talk about something else. Is it time for the picks?
I think it's time for the picks.
Yeah, I think it's time for the picks.
Okay. Adam, you want to go first?
Well, okay. So because of our conversation earlier, I was surprised. I did a search for it, pick Air Video yet?
I feel like I have.
Yeah, I thought you did. Okay.
But anyway, you can pick it again because it's certainly worth mentioning again.
Well, I'll mention it real quick because I just, you know, I didn't check it out when I think you had picked it, and I have since, and it's just so cool, and it fits in with the whole Air Video thing. Now I'm getting my terms mixed up. We're talking about Air Video, AirPlay.
And AirPlay.
I keep doing it. But so Air Video, just for anybody who doesn't know, it's a little application that you run on your host computer, and then they have, you know, your Mac sits up in the menu bar and then lets you stream any video that is on your Mac, and you can define different locations to an iOS device. So
right, and it's Mac and PC, right?
I think so. I'm only a Mac user, so I don't pay attention to the PC stuff. But what's really cool too is you can also register your Air Video with the central server kind of thing, a la Back to My Mac, and then you can connect from anywhere, even over 3G, because it does on the fly recompression on your Mac to stream video out to you wherever you are.
Yeah. So in addition to simply allowing you to play a video that would normally work on your iPad and just stream it over the network, it also has this special feature where if you're trying to play a video that is not iPad compatible video, you can just say, hey, use live conversion.
Right.
And it'll use your Mac to convert the video on the fly to H.264 and then stream it over to your iPad.
Yeah. So you can point it at your movies folder or wherever you store whatever kind of video you want and pretty much have access to play that anywhere you want. So you become almost like your own little mini Netflix streaming server. It's like pretty unbelievable how easily and seamlessly it works. And that's what impressed me about it the most. And it has a really nice interface, and I've just been playing around with it. So if anybody's been wondering, how do I set that sort of thing up? That's just grab that app. And I forget what it costs, but it's not very much. They might have a free version. Do they have a free version and then a paid version? I just bought the thing, I think.
Yeah, I think it's $3 and it's a universal version. So there's also a free version, which I'm not sure what the limitations are on that, but it's just so worth it to be able to do that. So not only can you, it's also available for your iPhone or iPod Touch, so you can do that there. It works on the iPad, and I believe on both the iPhone and iPad, you can do video out. definitely on the iPad you can do video at. So many times I have pulled up a video from that's on my computer that is not in an Apple TV format, started the live conversion, and then just played it on my TV using AirVideo.
Yeah. And something I did that was awesome was I just pointed it at, because I have a lot of video in my iTunes, I just pointed it also at, you can point it at multiple video sources. And mm-hmm. so I pointed it at my iTunes movies folder, and I have access to all my iTunes through the movies through the app. So yeah. not the purchase
That's
stuff.
That's cool.
Not the purchase stuff, but you know, the anything that you put in there yourself. So there's that, and I guess I'll just do it since that may have been picked already.
I think that should be your pick because I couldn't find it.
Yeah, I couldn't find it either. But secondary pick, real quick, just because it you know, I've been on vacation for the last 5 days, and I didn't take anything other than my iPad and my iPhone 4. The iPhone 4 camera, unbelievable. I've been taking shots with it all the last few days. And if anybody's been wondering, you know, can you use the iPhone 4 camera as a replacement for like a point and shoot? I think you almost definitely can. You know, it's not going to replace your digital SLR, but a simple, if you had just a cheapy point and shoot, which is what I've always used as my secondary camera, I'm not carrying a point and shoot anymore. I'm sold on it. So
cool.
Just throw that out as a bonus pick.
Awesome. So AirVideo, I think it's two words. So Air space video.
Yes.
That's how I searched for it initially. I couldn't find it. So it's Air space video. Yeah. And it's $3. And Jeff, what is your pick this week?
Well, I might have to grab a different pick. I was going to pick flight control for the iPhone. But Adam, I believe you picked that at some point,
way back
you?
When. Great app though, okay. And it's Game Center. It's been updated for Game Center, so.
Which is why I was picking it, because it's a fun little game, 99 cents, and it's Game Center compatible.
Yeah, I think Adam actually picked it twice. I think
I did.
On episode 38, episode 45.
Oh, no.
And even episode 57.
So that, and now episode 100.
Yeah. All right. So do you want me to pick a different app?
Sure.
Have we done Simple Note yet?
I think we have, but it's definitely worth talking about because they've updated it significantly.
We've done too many shows. This is a problem. We're just going to have to stop.
Yeah,
or we have to start recommending fart apps.
Yeah,
we should stop if that's where we get to. We'll just stop.
I agree. But Simple Note, not a fart app.
It's not a fart app, and it's a productive app. So you can write your notes in it. The thing I really like is that if you have a free Simple Note account, it synchronizes what you're writing with that account, so you can get at your notes on other devices. So like if you write something on your iPhone, you can get at it from your iPad and your Mac.
Yeah. So I think the killer feature for it is that syncing thing. So it's just like notes on your, you know, the one that comes with your iPhone. But this one syncs to the cloud back and forth. So you type something up, go to the web page, there it is. Or if you can go to your iPad or whatever, check it out, make some changes, and then the changes are pushed out to all the other devices.
Yeah, so it's very cool. So it's a great way to not only have your notes, but to have them every place that you might need to get at them, and to have backups in case you lose your data on one of your devices.
Right, yeah. And the I don't know if you want to keep talking about it, but I could talk some more about Simple Note.
You're a Simple Note user, I'm guessing, Michael?
Oh, yes, constantly. I always... So in my menu bar on my Mac, or not the menu bar, but the Safari shortcut bar, I have the Apple Pages number one, just, you know, for kicks, but number two is Simple Note. So I'm constantly on Simple Note.
There you go. And Simple Note's free.
What? Okay, so I am, and I think I've mentioned this, I'm an Evernote user.
Mm-hmm.
What puts this over and above Evernote, or is it similar? Or
it's a different kind of app.
Okay.
So, you know, with Evernote, you're trying to dump in all kinds of content for whatever you need to use later.
Right.
With Simple Note, you're writing notes.
Okay.
And then it's just automatically pushing those notes out to your online account.
So these are more things like I would use stickies for, something like that, simple little jotty downy thingies.
Yeah, anything that you would use the notes application for, you just use SimpleNote instead, and then you get the added benefit of having it everywhere.
Okay. Right. I'm following you.
Yeah. And so, go ahead, Jeff.
Okay. So I occasionally write complete articles on my iPad. And so I had been writing them in Apple's Notes application and then emailing them to myself. And once I got SimpleNote, then I switched to writing them there, and it's been great. It also has the added bonus of Apple's Notes app doesn't follow good programming protocols or standards. So instead of constantly writing out the data that you're typing, excuse me, to a file, it caches it, and then does a periodic dump to your memory, or when you quit the application, it writes the cache out. So if Notes crashes, and I have found it to be a rather crashy application, you can potentially lose all kinds of data without intending to. But SimpleNote plays with data correctly. So if the application were to crash, which it's never done on me, you would lose little or no data.
Yeah. So because it continuously syncs all that stuff. And there has been an update for SimpleNote recently. So they updated the web page. So if you used SimpleNote in the past and thought the web page was kind of sucky, which I thought, they've updated it. It's much easier to use, and they have tons more features. One of the really cool things is if you have a document that you're always working on, you're maybe just taking notes on various things or, you know, whatever you want to do, you can go back in time. There's a little slider you can pull up on your iPhone or in the website or whatever, and go back. You can just drag that slider back and see how the document's changed over a certain period of time, which is really cool.
Oh, I've never done that. That's cool.
Yeah, it is. I don't know how far it goes back. I think it might depend on if you pay for it. So there's a plus version that you can do, and that will, I think, include, you know, no ads and that kind of thing. And why does it say I have a free account? I definitely paid for this at some point. And by pay for it, I mean somebody gave it to me. but it also includes tags, so those work like folders. I haven't really gotten into the tags yet, but for those who want organization stuff with your notes, if you have a lot of notes, you can use tags, and then they basically just work like folders. And I think you can use multiple tags, and so you can have interesting combinations of things. Let's see, what else is included? There's one other thing that I wanted to talk about because it's so cool. The ability to pin something to the top of your list. So if you have a note that you're always working on, you're always making a little tweak to it or adding something to it, the notes are arranged by last edit. So the last edited note gets to the top, and then it is pushed down. So if you have something that you always want to edit and look at, you can pin stuff to the top. And it seems like it does has improved backups and syncing and all that kind of stuff. So if you've used it in the past and you thought it was lacking in some way, I definitely recommend checking it out. And it's free.
Yeah.
And the iPad app is really cool. Have you checked out the iPad app, Jeff?
That's actually where I use it, because it's a lot easier for me to write on my iPad than it is on my iPhone. But I have it on my iPhone so that I can look up documents if I need to.
Yeah, it's just, I love it. So you have a double recommendation from Jeff and me.
Well, there you go.
And it's free, so just get it. And with that, my iPhone iDevice pick is, it's actually an iPad pick, and it is Twitter for iPad. So if you've been waiting for the wonderful Tweety, you know, that was acquired by Twitter, and repurposed as Twitter's app. You've been waiting for Tweety to come to the iPad. It's finally come. And it's totally, it's great. I love it. And it's not just a blowing up of the iPhone interface. It's almost a complete reimagining without changing some of the basic ideas that were in Tweety. But it's just fantastic, and it's free. It's my favorite Twitter app for the iPad. Have you guys checked out Twitter for the iPad yet?
Yes. And yeah. I like it. I have a question for you because Sure. Everybody's enamored with the interface, and I do like the interface. I like the little kind of three panels sliding over top of things, you know, as you drill down in your detail. And I don't know how to describe that other than, you know, the panels sort of slide over each other.
Right.
And so, you know, when you click on a tweet and it slides out the main tweet panel, and it has, if they have a link in it, it has the browser stuff in there, which is really cool. And you sort of slide it back to get to the main listing of all the tweets.
Right.
Is there a way, other than completely backing out and getting back in, to make that third panel go completely back off the screen? Like, I just want to re-hide it. And that's the only thing that bugs me about the interface is it's just always kind of hanging out over there on the left, you know, sort of quarter of the, or right quarter of the screen.
Just tap on the whatever source item.
Right, okay, so that's the
whatever.
That's the only way.
Yeah. So it'll jump you back to the main list, and then it'll dump all the rest of the other stuff.
If I tap the time... Oh, okay, great. That's what I couldn't figure out. So if I tap the timeline again, it'll go back away. So I don't have to... Because I was, stupid me, tapping, you know, some other category and then coming back to the timeline. And I was like, that's really annoying. But I guess you can just tap... I didn't even try tapping the timeline. Perfect.
Yep.
I like it even better now.
Yeah. There are definitely some weird things in here. And I've heard some complaints from people saying, you know, I don't get it. And I agree, there are some inconsistencies and there are some little things that need to be fixed, and some of it's a little bit confusing, but I mean, it's free, and I think it must be the best Twitter app for the iPad.
I keep discovering really cool new features. What I discovered something recently where it's like, there was like a two-finger pinch, like collapse, expand thing. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, if you like do two fingers down on a tweet, it'll open up the conversation.
Yeah, if it's a reply to something, you can, if you use two fingers and you tap on it and you pull down, it gives you a little
preview. But in the timeline, if you do the two finger pinch open thing
on
someone's tweet, you get their profile.
Right. Yeah. So you can pull
and
up
it sort of like opens up like this little folded letter thing.
Yeah.
Which is like crazy.
Wait, which that? Hold on. So tell me that again. Because
so go
I did
in the timeline and pinch open a single tweet in the timeline.
And yeah. So don't do the pull down. Do the pinch open.
Yeah. And it'll give you that person's profile page, you know, with the bio and their tweets and their.
Oh, okay. So when I do, if I just tap on their avatar, it opens up their page.
Right.
With all their info. If I do just the two-finger swipe or pinch to open it,
it what comes I get up instead, in a little dialog box.
I can't get it to do that, but I can get it. Oh, there it goes. Wow, that's actually really hard to do.
Yeah, because it's kind of a small space.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm not getting the gesture right, but it's the only way I could do it. I accidentally did it, and I was like, oh, that's weird.
But okay, try doing this. Put your... do like you're going to do the pinch and release, but keep both your fingers on the tweet, and it just drags that box open or makes it longer.
Right.
And there's nothing else in there.
Right.
That's the viewing of the conversation thing.
Right.
And then the interface is frozen up for me. So it definitely has bugs,
yeah,
but it's free.
Needs a little work, but...
And it's mostly,
you should be able to unselect a tweet, which
you can by tapping the thing in the one of the source things, either the timeline.
Yeah, you just got to keep tapping back on the source. So it's kind of a training. So that's the thing, is I keep discovering kind of new features. Maybe there's a manual somewhere I probably just haven't read. There's probably like a README or something somewhere.
There might be. I think so. There's an about. Nope. Just about. No help yet.
But yeah, it's got a lot of cool new user interfacey things that I'm still discovering. So I like
It would be nice if there was a how-to thing that listed all these features.
Probably one on the Twitter website or something, and we're going to get emails about it.
So okay, so have you guys found a way to, like if you have a bunch of direct messages that are showing as unread, to change all of them to read at once?
No, that feature is not in here, unfortunately. That's in Tweety or / Twitter for iPhone, where you just double tap on the messages icon, but
right. The
iPad version, it doesn't seem to exist.
You know, I really like this app, but it's very annoying that there are features that have been in the iPhone version for so long that aren't here.
Yeah, I agree.
I have a question now about the two-finger pull-down conversation thing in the timeline. Is there a way to make it stick? Or is it just like a...
It's a little preview thingy. So if you want to actually check out the conversation, I guess it's expected that you'll just tap on it and you'll get the whole
That's
deal.
That's too bad.
So that means, okay, well, I don't like interface inconsistencies.
Yeah.
So if I can bring pop-ups for some things in the interface that relate to that, I should be able to do it for all the different things. So they definitely have some things to fix. However,
yeah,
it's a really good app.
Yeah, overall. And I'm going to be, I need to get on the sending of bug reports to them. That's one of my favorite things to do is complain about interfaces. Yeah, so it's called Twitter for iPad, right? Is that what it's called?
I believe so.
Yes.
Yeah. Just go to, the Twitter app is actually universal. So grab the, it's just called Twitter. And it opens up as an iPad app on the iPad. So yeah, it's free. Check it out. And with that, I will say that you can check out the show notes and all the picks. We put the list of the picks every week on the website, as well as the drawing that Jeff occasionally does. We'll put that up there at wehavecommunicators.com or whcpodcast.com for the keyboard typing inclined people who don't like to type. Does that make sense?
Yeah, except they still have to type a lot. So, you know, they're set.
Yeah. Wehavecommunicators.com is the real website. You can send feedback to feedback@wehavecommunicators.com. And, of course, you can find Adam Christensen at the MattCast. MattCast.com is the website. And Twitter.com/MattCast is his Twitter. And, of course, there's the wonderful members version of the MattCast at member.mattcast.com.
Yep.
And you should really go sign up for that.
You should. Do it.
Thank you, guys.
And Jeff Gamet is at the Mac Observer, of course, macobserver.com, and twitter.com/jgamet is his Twitter. And if you're looking for a thong with a chicken on it, or something else with one of his drawings on it, check out his Cafe Press site, cafepress.com/jgamet. And Zazzle.com/JGamut. That's where a lot of the drawings that have been featured in the previous show notes, they end up there on mugs and underwear and little baby outfits, right?
That's right.
Yeah, and then soon to come will be a mug with us on it, right?
That's right.
Cool.
And I think I have it in my head how you guys should look, but I don't know if it's going to translate well into a drawing.
Is mine going to be in the style of Andrew WK, where I have a bloody nose that's just, and I'm partying hard while I podcast?
Oh, I hadn't thought about doing that. I was thinking about using your head that you have in your Lil Reviews Twitter account.
Oh, where I have a head crab on my head.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. I don't think people recognize me by the head crab, though.
Right. And for everyone that's composing an email right now to tell me don't do that, I'm kidding. I wasn't really going to do that.
Yes. And So check out his Cafe Press Zazzle sites. We'll let you know when the mug is available. And you can find my Twitter, as Jeff mentioned, twitter.com/lilreviews is what I'm doing occasionally. I do little reviews, so that's L-I-L reviews. I have a real Twitter where I talk about things, but, you know, I'm trying to pimp the little reviews.
And that's okay.
Do you guys follow that one? I don't know if I've been doing a good job with it. What do you think?
You know, I thought you had forgotten about that account for a little bit, and then you tweeted something yesterday.
Yeah,
is that right?
Yeah, I think I tweeted about the Hood Internet.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
And so I realized, oh, no, you are actually doing stuff there, and I think it's actually really cool.
Yeah.
A complete review in 140 characters or less.
Yeah, a review of just, you know, anything that I like or don't like. I think the stuff that I don't like is more important to talk about, and I really need to bash some more stuff.
Yeah, but it's fun to talk about the things you like.
Yeah, it's true.
So the trick is finding the balance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like when I talked about Perkins, how it sucks. Don't go there.
Yeah. Which reminds me, and I'm not sure why, I'm really bummed that we didn't have cake for the 100th episode.
There will be cake eventually.
Oh, sorry. I do follow little reviews, but the problem has been the signal to noise ratio thing that I was mentioning before. I think I miss a lot of your reviews. And it's funny because Ken Ray had mentioned about Devo's new album, and I was curious if it was any good or worth buying. And I see you have a review of it that says it is. So now
I
can buy it.
Yes, go get it. Everybody who thinks they might like a Devo album, go get it.
Did you comment on it and ping?
No.
See?
Yeah, people would know if I had commented on ping.
Yes, we would.
Yeah. All right. And I think that's it, right? We're good? All right. Well, we'll see you next time on We Have Communicators.
An iPod. An iPod. An iPod. An iPod. A phone. A phone. A phone. An iPod. An iPod. An iPod. An iPod. A phone. A phone. A phone. And an internet communicator. How are we going to communicate this? We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do?